Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pack Strikes Back, the podcast where we talk anything and everything Green Bay Packers. I'm your host, Joe, and joined as always by friend and co-host Ben. Ben, it's victory week. Packers won 34-24 against a heated rival Dallas Cowboys. How you feeling this week?
Joe, I'm doing pretty good. Especially after a big win over the Cowboys, it just kind of makes everything go a little bit better throughout the week. The Packers Cowboys is one of the most iconic matchups. I put Dallas almost on the same level as Minnesota and Chicago, just based on where I'm at. We have a lot of Cowboys fans here, so it's always nice when the Packers get a win, and I can kind of rub it in their faces all week.
Yeah, Duke was talking the same thing. You know, Duke's deep down there in Texas, and he was saying that he gets all that kind of crap all the time from Cowboys fans. So it's definitely nice when you can rub it into their noses a bit. But it's a big win. You know, who would have thought the Packers would be sitting at 4-1 so far this season? I mean, a lot of the talking head experts, so-called, whatever you want to call them, didn't think the Packers would be doing this well. You know, how LaFleur and Rodgers can't get along, and, you know, the team's not going to do anything. There's no receiving threats and blah, 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 and such like that. But Packers are sitting at 4-1. They've got big wins over Chicago, Minnesota, Dallas, Denver, per se. Denver's not as great as they had been, but, you know, they still have a tough defense, and the Packers offense finally looks like it's starting to click, especially the run game.
And oh, definitely.
Go ahead.
I was going to add that, out of that 4-1 record, the good thing is that those four wins are all quality wins. Over like you said, good opponents with the exception of Denver. But to be sitting at 4-1 at this part of the season, like you said, over key wins, obviously two in the division with Chicago and in Minnesota, and then against Dallas, who I think could be a pretty good team. You know, they're making some noise throughout the league, and so to be able to get four wins at this point in the season is very relieving. And like you said, especially on the back of a player like Aaron Jones, who had a standout game against the Cowboys.
And there are a couple, I hate to be that guy. The Packers are a couple of bad referee calls away from being 5-0. You know, that Eagles game came down to some shady calls. And I mean, there's been shady calls all year long, and it seems like every single football game, no matter who's playing. But there were some calls in the Eagles game that if they want to win a would have went a different way, the Packers could be looking at a 5-0 record.
Oh, no doubt. I put it in my article that week that Philadelphia Green Bay game was the worst officiated game that I've ever seen, honestly. It's like that the officials have no idea anymore what pass interference is. You know, we get the play stops every 6 seconds to challenge another pass interference. And then we're challenging this and we're challenging that and reviewing this. And there was no rhythm to that game whatsoever. There was no consistency in the play calling, especially on that wheel route where the Eagles went free for a touchdown. It looked like they picked Blake Martinez. Should have been offensive pass interference. I mean, there's no consistency to the play calling, but, the Packers, I will say this, that the Packers were in position to win the game. They should have won it. But, to get a win over Dallas, though, again, with some more questionable calls, especially that roughing the passer, that had me going all week still.
Oh, yeah, I love the tweets out there that people are sending their thoughts and prayers to Dak Prescott over that rough hit.
Who would have thought, just barely, and I'm all for player safety. You know, I get why they want to protect the quarterback. Yes, he is worth a lot of money to a lot of these teams. A lot of these seasons, are on the backs of quarterbacks. But, I mean, just barely touching the guy is not going to end a season. There has to be a little bit of common sense to some of these play calls. And we don't see that anymore.
Well, and I understand that technically it's a penalty because of the hands to the head, but that was such an incidental contact that, and I don't remember which player it was, or it could have been a former player, but somebody said it, that in the heat of the moment, Dak Prescott didn't even probably feel that hand touch his helmet.
No, probably not at all. I mean, he barely even flinched when he was rounding the corner there. You know, if a guy would have just laid him out, which, you know, I'm all for quarterbacks getting tackled too. You know, quarterbacks are players and they deserve to be, you know, treated like players. You know, there's some just form tackles that we're seeing on quarterbacks. I mean, shoulder on the waist, wrapping up and taking to the ground, and then they're getting flagged for it. So I don't know. There's got to be something that changes, and I feel like reviewing more plays isn't gonna help. I remember, you know, years ago reading a book by John Madden, and who I think is, you know, was one of my favorite personalities in football, and you know, he was saying that he thought that football was gonna change, and this book was written in the 80s, and he's saying that he thought, you know, football someday is gonna be officiated by computers, and they're gonna tell everything, and the computers are going to make all the play calls for the coaches. They're going to take all the human element out of it, you know, and with all these reviews, it almost feels like that's going to happen. And that's something I don't want to happen, but you know, there has to be a fine line between keeping players safe and letting them play the game. And they just haven't found it yet.
Yeah. And the NFL sure isn't going to do anything about it. I mean, this is the same NFL that, you know, had the replacement refs and the failed Mary and wouldn't do nothing about it. And, you know, they can't decide what to do on anything. And this isn't necessarily against Goodell per se, because I think Goodell is trying to do the best he can. But it's like anything else, he's having to answer to the owners of the teams. And when you've got to answer to somebody, you always take the slow way to doing things, because you can't risk pissing off this one over here to help this one over here, because then there's a chance you're not, you know, they're going to get rid of you. Mm-hmm. And it, I don't know if anybody else has seen this movie, but it's one of my favorite, and it's a different sport anyway, but it's one of my favorite baseball movies, called Eight Men Out. It's about the 1919 Black Sox scandal where the White Sox threw the World Series, blah, blah, blah. But there's a scene in it where they're talking to, and this is the actual guy's name, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, about becoming the first commissioner in baseball. And he said, and they're starting to talk about, oh, well, we're willing to give you this, you know, a 5-year contract worth this amount of money. He says, no, lifetime contract. And all these guys are standing there like, what? He goes, when a man's worried about his job, he's not going to make the right decisions.
That's true.
And that's pretty much it. It's true. Goodell's got to worry about his job per se, because if he gets enough of the owners mad at him, they're going to boot him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he's got to placate his quote unquote bosses. So I don't think he's doing the best he can to placate everybody. And like I said, this isn't standing up for Goodell at all. Cause I mean, he's done some questionable things himself, but again, when you've got to answer to somebody, you don't always make the best of choices. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I mean, nothing's any worse than the Steelers game this past weekend where Mason Rudolph got knocked out. It was basically almost a worse hit than what Jamal Williams went through, and their cart died, and they had a backup one, and they didn't bring it out because Mason Rudolph said he didn't want to, or he wanted to walk off under his own power. The guy's in the, he just got nailed, probably knocked out. It's got a concussion. You're not listening to the patient. You're doing what's best for the player. That doesn't look good on the NFL.
No, no, not at all. And it's been things like that, you know, throughout Goodell's time as commissioner. You know, one thing that I think back to, obviously, is in the Super Bowl against the Niners and the Ravens, you know, with the whole incident where the lights go out and New Orleans. And, that, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, how can this happen in a Super Bowl, the biggest game, you know, of any sports league of any time. And, you know, you're playing in a place where the lights are going to go out. And then you talk about things like player safety. And then you talk about, you know, things that he's done, you know, as far as fining players for certain things. And, you know, it's just, it's getting a little out of hand. I feel like the NFL obviously was at its peak when Pete Rozelle was commissioner, who I think is the best commissioner that the NFL has ever had. And we just, there's some things that we need to progress to. You know, I'm all for, again, like I said, keeping players safe, but there's also some things that is getting way out of hand. You know, it's amazing to me how one missed call in the NFC Championship game last year is going to affect teams across the league for years to come because of one missed call that potentially cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl. And now, you know, we got this ridiculous rule where you can challenge plays. You know, you're taking, like I said, you're taking some of the human element out of the game. I don't like that at all. But there just has, again, there has to be a fine line of everything in football.
Well, here, I'm going to go into my conspiracy theory corner real quick. And because I see the same thing in baseball now that baseball's starting to do their replays and talking about getting a computer strike zone and whatnot. There's been so many bad calls in baseball that and it's doing the same thing in football that I'm starting to wonder if the refs and the umps are doing it on purpose now, because it seems like that when they get called out for a missed call, that next week everything gets two times worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they start overcompensating for it. So I wonder if the refs in the NFL and the umpires in baseball are starting to do it on purpose because people are complaining about it all the time, or they're trying to move into having computers do their jobs and whatnot. So it's interesting. I'm going to put my soapbox away and climb out of conspiracy corner because we need to start talking about the Dallas stuff. Like I said at the top of the show, Green Bay beat Dallas 34-24, and it was all basically behind the running attack. I mean, Rodgers put up some decent numbers. Obviously, Devontae Adams was out, so they didn't have their star receiver. But Aaron Jones, 19 attempts, 107 yards, 4 touchdowns, which I believe they said ties the franchise record for touchdowns, rushing touchdowns in a game. He also was targeted 8 times for 7 receptions for 75 yards. He pretty much did it all this game after pretty much being stalled against the Eagles. He came out and had the game, pretty much the game of his life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. And you know, Matt LaFleur has been wanting to establish the outside zone all year. You know, that has been, he's wanting to make that his, you know, the bread and butter of his offense. A lot like Mike Shanahan used to do in Denver in the 90s with Terrell Davis. You know, they want to make that run game a staple in their offense. And then everything else kind of works off of the outside zone as far as the RPOs and then, you know, the play action game, the rollout game, and stuff like that. And so when they was able to start clicking, you know, Aaron Jones, he has a tremendous ability to see the cutback, which is key in the outside zone run. You know, if you got players over pursuing like Dallas was doing, there's flying to the football one side, he would be able to see that cutback and hit it. And he had some pretty big runs off of it. And then, you know, when Dallas starts honoring the cutback, then Aaron Jones is able to hit the edge and get some big runs. And so it worked for him all game. Dallas didn't have an answer. and they just feasted off the outside zone all game. I know that, you know, so far this year they've been wanting to do a lot of the inside zone stuff because the outside zone hasn't been there. You know, against Denver it wasn't there. Against Philadelphia, dang sure wasn't there. You know, against Minnesota it wasn't there. So this was the first game really that we was able to see what the Matt LaFleur offense is capable of. And if they can work like they did against Dallas, and the offensive line can be, you know, a big part of that, even though I wasn't too impressed with some of it. You know, I was hated to see Corey Linsley go out of the game. I think he's a big part to successful outside zone running attack. But for the most part, they had a really good game. Bakhtiari, though, I was a little surprised. He struggled a lot at times, especially in pass protection. But for the most part, they was able to get things down the ground. And Aaron Jones was awarded Player of the Week just today.
Yep, I saw that. And, I mean, it's really weird to have the rushing attack be the center focus of the Packers offense after years of Aaron Rodgers being the guy and having to do it all because the Packers couldn't get a rushing attack for anything. So, and I mean, Rodgers had a okay game, but it definitely wasn't one of the best games. I mean, it was enough to, you know, it was enough. I don't know if there's any more you can say to that. It was enough. 22 of 34 for 238 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, and he took two sacks. And after a week of him, you know, last week against the Eagles being the leading rusher of the game for the Packers, you know, it's nice to see somebody else take the brunt of that work. But the weird part about it is what the offense was able to do on their side of the ball, the Packers defense, even though the Packers came out with a win, the defense seemed to have some struggles there because, you know, the two stat lines here, Aaron Rodgers versus Dak Prescott, I gave you Rodgers' stat line, 22-34, 238, nothing. Dak Prescott went 27 of 44 for 463, two touchdowns, three interceptions, and he took three sacks. With that kind of those two stat lines, you would think Prescott would have came out with the victory instead of Rodgers. It was just amazing to see Dak shred the secondary like he did. And, you know, one of the bad things about it is Jair Alexander looked bad this past game. After looking solid all year long and having a great rookie year, you know, this was probably his worst game of his career so far. And he was stuck on Amari Cooper, and Cooper had 11 receptions for 226 yards with one touchdown and the long being a 53. And, you know, when you're the number one guy and you've got to go against their number one receiver, the defensive coordinator's putting a lot of faith in you. You can't let him down on that. And, you know, I don't want to pound or, you know, pile it on Jair because, you know, he has been so solid. But, yeah, it was pretty bad. Ben, what did you see out of Jair when you were doing your breakdown?
Well, you know, Joe, one of the things that the Packers defense did a lot of early in the game, in the you know, first half, they played a lot of man coverage. And because of that, they got torched a lot. Jair Alexander got just torched by Amari Cooper. It seemed like, you know, that whole first half. You know, Mike Pettine started to play off a little bit, play a lot of zone, play cover three. And the Packers, when they was at their best in the pass defense, was when they was playing cover two, which we haven't seen a whole lot of this season. In fact, we haven't seen hardly any. So really, the Cowboys got a heavy dose of cover two later on in the game, which worked out well for the Packers. But, you know, when Jair was getting beat, it was primarily in man coverage, which is really surprising because usually he's a lockdown corner in man coverage. And so, you know, it seemed like he was just slow with the footwork against Amari. You know, he wasn't able to break and turn and go like we're used to seeing. He's playing a lot of head-up technique as opposed to playing inside leverage and forcing him to the boundary. Which he's able to do a lot of later on when they switched to cover three, but that man coverage just beat him early in the game and it showed. But you know, when they was playing cover two, and I understand why Mike Pettine doesn't want to play a lot of cover two. You know, you don't want, you know, your one of your best defensive players just sitting there playing in the flats. You want him to turn and run with some of these receivers and give him the chance to get a takeaway or two. So he's committed to playing cover one. He's committed to playing cover three, and it just didn't work for him. So, you know, he had to rely more on the safeties in the second half, which turned out to be better for him. But the Packers were going to give up a few of those plays, those 4-yard plays, pass plays, those, you know, intermediate throws, and just bend but don't break was the kind of the mentality throughout this game, which is really odd to see from his defense because, you know, he wants to play a lot of cover one and press and be aggressive, and he wasn't able to do that. But, you know, when the Packers got to play more zone coverage is when they really started to do well.
And, I mean, even Michael Gallup, who was injured coming into the game, had 7 receptions for 113 yards. So the secondary really wasn't playing the greatest per se, but I mean, you did have a couple of them who had a pretty solid game. Kevin King probably had a career game against Dallas, had 6 tackles, 2 pass defenses, and the 1 interception, and could have had a second one. I know there was one that bounced right out of his hands. It hit him right in the hands and he couldn't catch it. But he had the late interception that I would say pretty much kind of sealed the game for Green Bay. And, you know, when he's healthy, he's been a great cornerback. I mean, I know a lot of people are out there giving him crap. Well, he can't stay on the field. You know, we need to cut ties with him. But like I kind of mentioned, I believe it was last week when I was talking to Duke prior to the Eagles, or just after the Eagles game, prior to the Dallas game. It's one of those things where I would hate to cut ties with them now because it's bit the Packers in the butt before. They, you know, they let Hayward, you know, Casey Hayward had some injury problems. He had some issues. And they let him walk after his 4 years, and now he's, you know, tearing it up out in Los Angeles for the Chargers. I'm trying to think who's the other one. You know, Micah Hyde, kind of the same situation. A little bit, I mean, he had a little bit of injury concerns here and there. But, you know, it was more that he didn't have a place in the Capers defense. They let him go, and he's been pretty solid for, you know, Buffalo right now. And there's been others that the Packers have cut ties with that, you know, they've went on and had pretty solid years. And then, you know, but there's also been others that they've cut ties with and you never heard from them again. Mm-hmm. But I'd hate to cut ties with King right now, because when he has been on the field, he's been a pretty solid cornerback.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, he's one part that has really surprised me so far this season. And he's shown what he's capable of. You know, Kevin King, I feel like Kevin King is the kind of corner who does really well in cover two. He has a strong presence in the flats. He's not as good as Jair when it comes to, like, turning and running and playing cover one. He is more of a threat there in the flats. So Mike Pettine can get pretty creative seeing how well Kevin King's doing right now. He can play a lot of cloud coverage where, you know, you get the rotation with Jair playing a half, and then Amos playing a half, and then Kevin King clouding up the strong side of the field. And, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of that yet, but, you know, he's really good on the run. He has a good break on the ball. And it's good to have another corner out there who can, you know, make his presence felt against some of these stout wide receivers. And so I've been really happy with Kevin King so far. And like you said, we've been a little leery because of the history of injuries. But like you said, Joe, to cut ties with him at this point would just be silly. And, you know, I hate to see guys like Casey Hayward. You know, you think of him and, you know, Micah Hyde and a lot of these really talented defensive backs leave Green Bay. You know, Morgan Burnett was one of them when he went to Pittsburgh. You know, we had a really stout defensive backfield in like 2014, and so we're finally starting to get back to that point where the Packers defensive backs are really good. I felt like we didn't see that in 15 and 16 and 17. And I think we're finally back to that point where this is a really talented position group all the way around.
You know, here's an interesting tidbit that I just learned today. You know, the famous interception Kevin King had in college where he went up one-handed and intercepted it in the end zone against, I believe it was Arizona State. Mm-hmm. Do you know who the quarterback on Arizona State was when he made that interception?
Oh. I can't think. The last, I don't know, actually.
It was Manny Wilkins, who's currently on the Packers practice squad. I didn't realize that until somebody was playing I guess ESPN's been doing, this is their top 10 day or week or month or some kind of crazy crap like that. And somebody had posted the interception as one of them that should be on their top 10. And they showed it from the quarterback view, and on the nameplate it was Wilkins, and it clicked that it was Manny Wilkins from Arizona State, which I thought that was kind of an interesting tidbit that now they're both on the Packers.
Yeah, they probably had some pretty good stories to tell each other during training camp.
Well, I wonder if King would rub it into him if he ever intercepted him in practice or whatever. Yeah, you remember that one time where I went up and, you know, one-handed and but, you know, other than the secondary really getting kind of carved up, the rest of the defense played really well. They held Dallas they held Ezekiel Elliott to under 100 yards. He had 62 total rushing yards, which, you know, that was the one thing everybody was worried about coming into this game, was Zeke Elliott running wild against the Packers, and to hold him to only 62 yards, that's good. I mean, I don't know what other words to use for it, but for a guy who's easily top 10, maybe even top 5 running back in this league right now, and to only hold him to 62 rushing yards, you can't ask for anything better. And I mean, a lot of it comes down to the two Smiths, the law firm of Smith and Smith. They, Zadarius had 2 sacks. Preston had 1. They both, you know, Zadarius 3 tackles. Preston had 4. Zadarius had 2 tackles for a loss. Preston had 1 tackle for a loss. Zadarius had 4 QB hits, and Preston had 2 QB hits. I mean, they were wreaking havoc against Dak the whole game. Amos even added in 1 sack. Although it's not reading up on the stat line, he did have a sack, didn't he? Or did that get wiped away because of the penalty?
I think he had I know he had a pressure because they sent both him and Martinez through the same gap.
Well, I know he hit him. I remember the hit because, I mean, it was a wicked hit, but it's not reading in the stat line. I'm pretty sure he had a sack, so either it got wiped away from because of penalty, or they just don't have it in the stat line. But, you know, the defense as a whole played well. Like you said, it kind of reminded you a lot of Capers' bend don't break defense, which, you know, it's not the greatest in the world to have, but, you know, it served them well against the Cowboys. Now, Blake Martinez, and I know a lot of people have been kind of talking about him. I've seen the talk on Twitter, and I know you've kind of mentioned a few things, but people seem to be down on Blake, and I think it's really weird because I thought he's progressed every year up to this year, and I thought he's played with a lot of intensity so far this year, but why is it people are down on Blake Martinez right now?
Well, you know, Joe, I think the biggest thing right now is it just comes to the run fits, and it's all in this new Mike Pettine 3-3-5 defense that he's wanting to play, and I feel like a lot of that is because of lack of depth, you know, there's not another inside linebacker that can come in and play. So Martinez ultimately is responsible for, you know, everything, you know, tackle to tackle. Kenny Clark is playing one gap. You know, you have both your interior defensive linemen playing the gap, the B gap, and then your edge players playing the C gap. So really, he doesn't have a responsibility right now except for to read the back and then flow to the side of the back and then clean up anything coming his way. And I feel like he's having a tough time getting adjusted to that system. You know, under Dom Capers, they played a lot of six-man fronts with, you know, four down defensive linemen and two inside linebackers. So he was responsible for just one gap. Now he's having to cover a multitude of gaps, and he's either, you know, a step too late and he gets cut off by a guard, or he overruns a play and he gets cut back on him and there's no one there to play cutback. And so I think it's just taking time for him to get into this new system. Mike Pettine came out and he said that, you know, he wants to make this his base defense. And so, you know, unless the Packers get another inside linebacker, granted there's, you know, BJ Goodson, but, you know, he went down, he was injured. And so, he hasn't really been a viable option at this point, but I think it's just a matter of Blake Martinez taking time, which will come with the expect that he's going to play, you know, a lot better. And really against Dallas, I thought was one of his better games. Against Philadelphia, I thought it was not good at all. I mean, he was slow scraping to the football and was getting cut off by a guard or a tackle or a tight end, and there's just no presence in the middle. So, but I will say that against Dallas, I think things are trending up for Blake Martinez. He had a lot better game.
Yeah, like I said, just in my eyes, he's looked like he's played a lot better. So it kind of surprises me when people are talking down about him. And, you know, I've even seen talk of fans not wanting to offer him a second contract. And I think that's really odd considering he's pretty much the leader in the middle of that defense. And, you know, it's kind of funny that, and I just thought of it after saying leader, but, you know, you've got the talking heads out there, and I'm going to call him out, even though I'm scared to, because he did kill somebody before. Ray Lewis, I know it's you know, he's got off on it. It's not really, you know, whatever. He did it. I'm sorry, but yeah. Ray Lewis calls out the Packers defense, saying there's no real leaders on the defense. And I think that's a slap in the face to this, you know, the law firm of Smith & Smith. And that's a slap in the face to Blake Martinez and guys like that who are leading the defense. I mean, in all my years of watching Packer football, I haven't seen anybody like the two Smiths since probably Reggie White. You know, these guys are outspoken. They're team people. They're, you know, helping the other players on, you know, they're a real veteran presence, and, you know, they're still young themselves, but for him to call out and say there's no real leadership on the defense is nuts. And I know he's never going to hear this, so that kind of makes me feel safe in a way. But, you know, I think that's a bunch of crap. And, you know, if you don't think there's a leadership, you haven't been to Green Bay. You haven't seen these guys. And, you know, you need to shut up.
And well, it was surprising too because I really like Ray Lewis. Like as a player, I thought he was one of the best linebackers of all time. So for him to come out and say something like that is really surprising. And the thing that irks me about the media is that they always try to call out players and their leadership and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, how are you going to know anything about leadership if you're not in the locker room? You know what? I mean, I remember when we talked about this early in the year, when that article came out about Aaron Rodgers, and I, you know, I said the same thing then that I'm saying right now. You know, how do they know if they're not a part of the locker room culture? They don't know who's a leader and who's not. You know, everyone leads in their own way. I remember, I don't remember because I wasn't born, but you know, Roger Staubach was a very different leader than Joe Namath or you know, Steve Young was a lot different than Joe Montana, you know, stuff like that. You know, Brett Favre obviously is different than Aaron Rodgers. And so I wasn't happy whatsoever, but I was kind of, I liked the little tribute that Za'Darius gave to Ray Lewis after he got that sack.
Well, I don't know if it was a tribute or more just saying you just need to shut up because this
is slapping the face. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's the tossing of the gauntlet. Now, Za'Darius, you need to kind of duck down because this guy is notorious for this stuff. So, you know, but just, yeah, you know, don't go to any clubs or anything where Ray Lewis is going to be around. I mean,
and I'll say this. You were talking about that. You know, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith could be, you know, two of the best rushers that we've seen since Reggie White. You know, I agree with that. And this is kind of where my
back that I wasn't necessarily saying that they were the best rushers we've had since Reggie. I was saying more that they're the best leadership that I've seen since Reggie. They've been the most vocal since Reggie. You know, Reggie was the Minister of Defense. He was the leader of defense of the defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Packers haven't really had that for the longest time. I mean, they've had guys on the team. You know, Mike Daniels was a pretty good outspoken guy. Clay, a little bit. But they really haven't had the type of personality. You know, Jair has been very outspoken. I wouldn't call his more leadership as I would it being more cockiness, but Za'Darius and Preston have been those guys that they're taking the younger guys under the their wings. You know, that's Duke and I kind of mentioned this last week where the Packers had claimed Tim Williams off of waivers from Baltimore. And one of the concerns I had with him was Matt Miller had said something about, you know, the talent was there, but the work ethic wasn't. And that was a common thing I had kept hearing about Tim Williams was he just didn't want to put in the work, but he had all the talent in the world. And after the Packers announced that they had claimed him, I remember one of the beat writers had asked Za'Darius Smith about it because Za'Darius and Tim had played together down in Baltimore. And Za'Darius was like, you know, he's a great young man. I'm glad to have him in. I'm hoping to work with him more. You know, he's excited to be here. And you never really heard that stuff from players in the past. You know, you'd hear the, yeah, it's great, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But you never really heard the, well, I'm going to work with him. We're going to get him in here. We're going to get him the playbook. You know, we're going to get him going and hopefully he's going to take off and all this stuff. And I got to thinking that's true leadership. And the Packers haven't had that in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's true. And, you know, players like that are incredibly vital to a team's success. And, you know, it is interesting that we really haven't had somebody like that on the defense in a long time that is just the leader of the defense, somebody to step up and take that role. Like you said, Mike Daniels, again, he was the guy that was really outspoken, and my fandom almost takes over at this point, but because Clay Matthews was one of my all-time favorite Packer players ever. To see him leave was like a dagger because I really enjoyed having Clay Matthews in Green Bay. And I think that he will be remembered as one of the, I would say the second greatest Packer defensive player of all time behind Reggie White, you know, breaking Reggie's record and things like that. But, you know, Clay Matthews had a different way about him than Za'Darius Smith does. So Za'Darius is an outspoken guy that it's like you said, is going to try to build up the morale of this defense. And that's what the Packers need right now. They need that morale booster, that guy who's going to lift them up. It's contagious around the whole team. You can really see it affect their performance on the field.
Yeah. And they were really, and it is, and you can see it in them when they do their celebrations, whether it's a sack or an interception or whatever, when they're when it's a team celebration, they're doing their posing together and stuff like that. You know, that's, again, you haven't seen that in a long time, so it's great to see. But, you know, let's finish out with the Dallas real quick so we can move on to this week's game against Detroit. The only other thing I really want to bring up is, again, the Aaron Jones game. I don't remember if I mentioned this or not, but the four touchdown rushing touchdowns was it ties the franchise record for touchdowns in the game in a single game, rushing touchdowns in a single game. And I think they said Jim Taylor and Terrell, what's the other guy's name? I want to say it was Terrell something. Sorry, guys. You'll have to fact check me on this one. But there was a guy from the 70s that had four in a game.
Terrell
Dorsey Levins. Yeah, Middleton. Something like that.
I think, yeah.
Something like that. There were only three other players that have had four in a game for the Packers. So, you know, Aaron Jones is up there with some solid names. And, you know, it's great to see him have the success he's had so far. So, I think that's about all I've got for the Dallas game. Is there anything you want to add about Dallas before we move on to Detroit?
Really, for the most part, I think I covered all my angles. I just, like you said, it's good to see Aaron Jones, you know, have the success that he did against Dallas. And we've been waiting for a breakout game like this all year. And I think Matt LaFleur is going to put him in a really good position to do that week to week now. And kind of fit things, all the pieces together for where Aaron Jones can have a breakout year that we all expected.
Oh, I guess I will throw this in there. I was talking about celebrations. There is nothing greater than seeing Aaron Jones wave bye-bye to a defender on his way to score a touchdown. Now, I have to laugh. I guess he was on the Pat McAfee, McCaffrey. Sorry, Pat. I'm not good with names. Show, and he told Pat that he can't wave at the defenders anymore from now on.
Which is a shame because I kind of liked it.
Yeah, but I'm really surprised, and somebody else mentioned this on Twitter, I'm really surprised he didn't get a taunting penalty, because the way the flags were being thrown that game anyway, it was just really surprised he didn't get a taunting penalty for waving. But I don't think anybody really expected it. At first, when I saw it, I was like, is he waving or is he sticking his arm out there for, you know how running backs do for like their stiff arm and that, because the defender was coming at him. But then I saw the fingers go up and down. I'm like, he's waving. He's really waving.
That was great.
And this kind of went viral per se a little bit for me. It's gotten well over, 100 likes so far, but I found a copy of that photo online, or a photo of him waving, and I turned it into a Madden cover. And yeah, it kind of blew up a little bit. It's got well over like 100 likes and 20 some retweets or whatever it is. But I'm also getting a lot of blowback on it because I've got people, don't you curse him like that. It's like, guys, calm down. It's not an official Madden cover. If I had the power to curse, I would have cursed people a long time ago.
Yeah, well, you know, Antonio Brown's a good enough proof of that one. So,
yeah, and if you really want to have that, I've made a Madden cover before training camp of Aaron Jones, and I think he's had a pretty good year so far.
Well, it wouldn't be Packers Twitter unless everyone overreacted, and so.
Well, I think a lot of them were just giving me crap about it, but it's just funny that they have to bring that up, that, you know, oh, well, you're cursing him by putting him on a Madden cover. For one, it's not even official Madden cover. Come on, guys. Settle down. Settle down.
And but, Joe, I might have to get a copy of some of them pictures for next year's Madden. Those are pretty sweet, I will say. If you people haven't seen it, go check out Joe's pictures. They're pretty sweet.
I appreciate that, and I'm happy everybody's liking them. Like I always tell my good buddy Wes, I hate putting my own stuff up because I am my own worst critic. So I'll sit there and I'll look through the pictures, say, you know, oh, well, I should have cropped that a little bit more. Maybe I overcropped that, and I hate looking at my own stuff. But it's great to see that other people are getting enjoyment out of it. My favorite one that I've done, and, you know, I know I'm really pumping myself up here, but my favorite one that I did was the Danny Vitale, where he was coming out of the tunnel. I think it was the Denver game where he's doing the Superman pose, and I cut him out and put him into the WWE WrestleMania background. And I didn't know it until like a couple days ago when somebody had tagged me into it or had asked somebody that I follow on Twitter if they had done it, and he had tagged me. And Danny had actually taken that photo and posted it on his Instagram and was talking all about the photo and how he loves the Packers fans because of stuff like this. And I didn't know he had done that, because I think I have an Instagram, but I don't use it. And yeah, somebody had asked some guy that I follow, well, I'll give him, it's Monty Gunslinger, and Monty does a lot of really good edits and stuff like that. And somebody had asked him if he had done it, and he goes, no, Iowa Joe did this. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't know Danny had done this, so it was just amazing to see that players are even noticing some of the stuff that us fans do of them.
Oh, yeah. That one was probably my favorite, and to see him retweet it also was pretty sweet.
So, I guess that's enough personal stuff. Let's go ahead and move into Detroit, because we're starting to get a little bit long here. As everybody knows, this is another one of them big rivalry games. I got a few notes here about the rivalry, and then Ben, I know you've watched a little bit of Detroit, so you can give us a little bit of what you see and what you hope the Packers are going to do. The rivalry started in 1930 when the Detroit Lions were known as the Portsmouth Spartans and were based out of Portsmouth, Ohio. They would later move to Detroit and become known as the Lions. The Packers won that meeting 47-13. The Packers and Lions have played a total of 179 games. Packers lead at 100 wins, 72 losses, and 7 ties, with a total points scored of 3,709 to 3,227. The postseason results, the Packers lead that with a 2-0 record. The longest winning streak for both teams is the Lions had 11 straight games between 1949 and 1954, and the Packers had 10 straight games twice, once 1940-45, and then 2005-2010. And, of course, everybody knows right now the Lions currently have a four-game winning streak against the Packers, and a lot of that is due to Aaron Rodgers' injuries. Don't forget that, Lions fans. It's because you've been playing our backups.
Real talk.
Yeah.
It is surprising because I didn't really think about this before I saw it on paper, but that the Lions actually had a 5-game win streak right now over the Packers.
Four game win streak.
And, you know, Detroit really in recent years has kicked it up a notch. Granted, it's the same old Lions, but there has been some good things they've been doing. Honestly, I don't think adding Matt Patricia to the mix is one of them. You know, he's going to do a lot of different things and show a lot of different things on defense as far as flexibility. It's hard for me to gauge really if Detroit is a true 3-4 or 4-3 team because he shows so many different looks. Which I think
and
actually
I think he learned that a lot from Belichick, because much Pettine does, Belichick doesn't have like a set defense. He can run 3-4, 4-3, 3-3-5. What's another big one? Like 4-2-6 or whatever it is, or 4-2-5 or whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah. And well, when they get in the sub package, which they run probably 80-90% of the time, it's really hard to watch film on like New England and Detroit, because they're just, they're mixing guys up all over the field and it's hard to keep track of them. You know, it's not like the Detroit of old where there was a true 4-3 team and they'd have four guys with their hands in the dirt, a lot like Minnesota does, look like Chicago used to do. Now Chicago's a 3-4 team. The Packers were used to be a big 4-3 team. Now they're obviously well committed to the 3-4, but I think it honestly plays into the Packers' favor right now, because of the threat of the running game. Aaron Jones, he could have another big game and feast when they're running six-man fronts, but when they want to stack the box and be flexible, then Rodgers has the ability to throw the football. So it's kind of good. I think it's going to be a strong 1-2 punch for the Packers' offense. I think that they're going to be able to really kind of have their way with this Detroit defense. And Detroit has, you know, they put up a really good game against Kansas City, but, you know, honestly, especially after Sunday night, I don't know how good Kansas City, or I don't know how good the Chiefs really are. So I don't know how much to take away from that Detroit Kansas City game, but nonetheless, I think the Packers offense could have another big game just based off of that.
Kind of looking at the injury report, which is, we'll know more game time, but the injury report as of today did not practice for the Packers was Davante Adams with a toe injury, Tony Brown hamstring, Darnell Savage with an ankle, and Robert Tonyan with a hip. Limited practice was Montrevious Adams with a shoulder, Brian Bulaga, it says, just on regular rest. Kenny Clark had a calf. Jimmy Graham was on rest. Kevin King with a knee groin injury. Mercedes Lewis with a heel. Lindsley, of course, is in the concussion protocol. Will Redmond had a shoulder. This one was kind of weird that it just kind of popped up. Was Aaron Rodgers with a knee. Marquez Valdes-Scantling with a hamstring calf. Tremont Williams with a back. And then, of course, back full for in practice, Oren Burks, Kyler Fackrell, Darius Shepard, Za'Darius Smith, and Jamal Williams, which it's good to see Jamal Williams back into full participation after that hit. For the Lions, their did not practice was Mike Daniels with a foot injury, Deshaun Hand with an elbow. I have no clue how you pronounce this guy's name. Amani Arouye, cornerback with a knee injury, and defensive tackle Ashawn Robinson with a knee. And then limited practice was Danny Amendola with a chest, Quandre Diggs with a hamstring, TJ Hockenson with a concussion, and Darius Slay with a hamstring. And back full for them is Matthew Stafford. So they're kind of banged up just like the Packers are at the moment. So it should be pretty interesting to see what's going to happen Monday night.
Oh, definitely. And really, initially seeing that injury report, it's kind of concerning for the Packers. I mean, but there's some of these guys that, you know, such as Aaron Rodgers, like we know that he's going to play. There's certain guys that we know they're going to play. So I'm not too concerned about it right now. Like you said, it's good to see Jamal Williams get back into the rhythm of practicing. Not sure how much we're going to see him play, but, you know, it's almost frightening because we don't want to be like, oh, you know, midseason form, the Packers are all banged up, but, nothing entirely too concerning right now. Because I know a lot of those guys on that list will still suit up and play some. So, And I will say this, I do love the Monday night games. There's something about Monday night football at Lambeau Field. It's just, there's so many good, iconic Monday night games that have been played, you know, at Lambeau Field. And so it's going to be good to see it. I will say, though, that I hate the Monday night broadcast on ESPN. I think it's, like, one of the worst in the league until they find somebody who's really good. But No, it'll be good. It'll be good to get back, you know, under the lights and play some Monday Night Football.
I wish I could find the stats real quick on Green Bay's record during Monday Night Football. But it last time I knew it wasn't the greatest. So I always hate seeing primetime games because the Packers always seem to flounder a little bit during primetime games.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's something I kind of noticed last year. It felt like Sunday Night Football was really like the Packers did not do well at all on Sunday night. I know just last year off the top of my head when they played Minnesota and got beat in Minnesota and then played New England, got beat in New England. You know, when we played Pittsburgh, we got beat by Pittsburgh. Well, that's 2 years ago, actually. So it just, I don't know, something about, I worry about Sunday night games anymore. It just feels like they don't play well. But when it comes to Monday night, I can't remember off the top of my head who we played last year on Monday night. We played the 49ers last year on Monday night and got the win there, but
barely.
Barely. That's exactly right. So I don't know. I'm kind of with you on that one. I worry about Monday. I worry about primetime games. I feel like the Packers do like their best at 12 o'clock noon on a Sunday. And there is a little bit of something to primetime games that is just, you know, obviously it has a different feel to it. But as a player preparing for something like that, sometimes it can get to some guys, but to get another win Monday night is going to be huge for this team, and be able to go 3-0 in the division at this point will be even bigger.
I found it on Wikipedia, so take this with whatever you want, because, you know, Wikipedia is not always the most truthful. I know that breaks a lot of people's hearts finding that out, but the Packers have played 9 games on Monday Night Football, and they have a record of 5-4.
It seems kind of low, almost.
Yeah. Well, that's since 2010. Sorry, I should have
prefaced that. Gotcha.
Since 2010.
Okay. So, you know, we have the opportunity to go 6-4 on Monday night, which I think is a strong possibility. I think everything right now is aligning well for the Packers, and, you know, all things considered, I think they should get a win.
I just hope it does not come down to a Hail Mary throw again. I don't think my heart can handle it.
Yeah, that is one primetime game I will say the Packers did pretty well at. And I remember I was back in college then, and I'm pretty sure I woke up the entire town because I was screaming so loud.
I think people thought I was having a fit in my guard shack. but yeah, it definitely, I don't want that. I want to blow out. Let's make a statement this game and just blow Detroit out on prime time and show who is the dominant force in the NFC North. Ben, I think that's all I got for this game. It should be good, but, you know, since we are in the season, we've been doing this a lot lately. What would be your final score for the Detroit Packers game Monday night?
My prediction this week is the Packers win it 35, another strong offensive showing, 35-17.
That's pretty good. That's probably about what I would put it. But like I said, I'm really hoping for a blowout. So I'm going to say 35-10.
I hope it's that one.
I hope. Well, I mean, even Stafford is kind of gimping around with a hip injury. And not that I wish injury on anybody. I really don't. So don't take this like that. But I think if the Smiths and company can get pressure on him and hit him, he's going to. And Stafford's proven this in the past. If you hit him, he's going to struggle. And I just think if they can get in early and they can hit him, with the injury he's already dealing with, I think he's going to flounder. And, you know, like the saying is, any given Sunday, anything can happen. And Detroit always plays Green Bay rough because it is a rivalry. But I think if the Packers can get consistent pressure on him, Stafford's not going to do much.
Definitely. And that'll be key, is to get pressure early and get pressure often on him and force him to make the mistake.
Well, I think that's all we got this week. This time I actually hit the record button. Ben and I had talked for a good half hour before I noticed that we weren't recording. So hopefully what we did record is just as good as what we didn't record. As always, you can reach me on Twitter at Iowa_Joe86. You can reach the show at TPSB Podcast. You can email us at thepackstrikeback@gmail.com. You know, send us your questions, comments, concerns, anything like that. Let us know how we're doing. You know, you can find the show on Twitter or on Stitcher, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and you can now find us on Pack to the Future, the website. Thanks again to Brian Fonfair and the guys over there. Ben writes for him, so while you're there checking out The Pack Strikes Back, check out Ben's articles, check out everybody else's articles, check out Pack to the Future's podcast. You know, more listens for all of us, the better. I know you guys are getting oversaturated with different podcasts, but we appreciate all the support you guys can give. Ben, I know you got a couple things you want to share. Go ahead and I'll just say share.
Sure. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at PTTFBen. Is my personal account. I have another account at PTTF_chalktalk, which really, I don't think I haven't really put anything on there this season, to be honest. A lot of my stuff's been on my personal one, so if you want to follow me, that's your best bet. And yeah, we got some good stuff coming out this week on the site. I should have a scouting report over the Lions up sometime before Saturday, or maybe on Saturday, to get you ready for the game. And so a lot of good stuff coming up over there, and yeah, make sure to check everything out.
Sounds good to me, guys. Have a great rest of the week. Hope for big win Monday night. We will talk to you next week, and as always, may the pack be with you.